The opinions expressed on this program are those of the program hosts and their guests and are not necessarily those of WSTU, St. Mary's Episcopal Church, and Temple Beit Haim. Products that may be mentioned are not necessarily intended as an endorsement. Any reproduction or retransmission of this broadcast is strictly prohibited. And now, WPSL presents a priest and a rabbi. Call in with your questions and comments at 220-9788-220-WSTU. Now, here's your host.
Good morning, Stuart, Florida. Doesn't every amateur radio host want to just do that at least once and live that dream? I mean, did you ever want to have that dream of being able to get on air and pull your Robin Williams? God rest his soul.
I live that dream. I'm living it right now.
Right now. We're in the midst of it. This is Father Christian and Rabbi Matthew here at 1450 AM, the only place to find your news, to find your entertainment, and of course, two clerics, 40-ish or 30-ish, talking about pop culture, talking about religion in 2018. Actually, today we will be talking about a couple topics. One of them is going to be, what is up with religion in the 21st century in America? Why is the global South, really all the countries that are under the equator, just booming with religion? And then in America and parts of Europe, it's just, well, not so much. So what's that all about? We'll be following up a little bit on what we talked about last week, which was kind of an anti-religious or pushback on religion, specifically anti-Semitism, anti-clericalism. What has it been like for the rabbi and myself in our own journey so far? Do people run the other way when they see me in a collar? And then, of course, the big deal was also to get a pure follow-up on Rabbi Matthew's 90210 challenge. And we will find out today. He was challenged by me, Father Christian, if he could drop 90210 in his sermon this last week. So we're going to do a little accountability. So Rabbi, oh, wait a minute. Should I say Rabu?
We can go with the rabbi. We can go with rabbi.
But why would I call you Rabu?
So we had a slight little challenge the other day. We had posted our flyer for our radio program, and unfortunately, as we were redoing the flyer to add St. Mary's Episcopal Church logo to our materials, it did say, please join us for Rabbi Durbin and certainly Father Christian Anderson's radio program. And underneath, in the small print, it had said, please join us for Rabbi Durbin's and Father Christian's new show. But I assure you that is being rectified, and we will certainly have a brand new flyer for all of our communities to share and enjoy and to repost.
Right, but I remember your office manager. She came into your office when I was there, and she was very smitten with the idea of this Rabu. She's like, "Well, aren't you somebody's boo?" I mean, that was her statement. I mean, you are somebody's boo. You're married to a rabbi, so you're her boo. So you guys are both like mutual raboonies.
Yes, in some semblance. Yes.
Right. Yes. So I'm voting to keep it.
Okay.
And it's sort of this endearment way, like you're my Rabu.
Well, I guess the question is, we will see if it does get changed. If it doesn't, then certainly, Father Anderson, I am your boo.
We're off to a great start today. All right. So what we wanted to do, like at the top of every show, is to learn a little bit more about one another. And today, with my learned friend here from Beit Haim Temple. All right. That took a little while to get out of my mouth. Two truths and a lie, my friend. Can you give me two truths and a lie about you, Rabbi, so the world can know more about you, to see that you're just an everyday dude? Give me two truths and a lie.
So two truths and a lie. So I'll go with, when I was 19 years old, I had the fortunate opportunity of meeting Kelsey Grammer in the bathroom at LAX Airport in Los Angeles.
One.
That is one. Two, when I was 19, I gave myself an earring.
Okay.
To which, as I, at that moment, as they tell you, you know, make sure you turn it. Don't put it in a, hoop.
Yeah.
I took it out, decided, I feel like it's closing up, and punched a hole through my ear and it turned black.
Okay.
That's two. Third is I have three brothers and one sister.
Okay.
So easy. Whom I love very much.
Easy. Okay. Three is the lie.
Three is the lie. Three is the lie.
Yeah. Padre Cristiano, para la verdad. Okay. All right. Good.
All right. As you said very clearly, that is the lie. I do. I only have three brothers. And I certainly do not have a sister, although now I have three daughters that kind of make up for that sister.
Yeah, you got some raboos there.
So Father Anderson.
Yes, sir.
Let's tell the listeners and our communities some of your lies. two truths and a lie. Two truths and a lie.
Okay, we will do that. We will do that. All right, here we go. And also, hey, we would love for you guys to call in. This show, it's just us and the producer, Mike. It's just the three of us dudes hanging out in here. So we would love to get some of the voices. 772-220-WSTU, which what's that number? WSTU
9788.
You just heard the angelic voice of Mr. Mike, our producer. So, all right. So here we go. Number one, my first truth or lie I'm about to tell you. I once got challenged to a fight by Coolio. You know the rapper Coolio?
Heard of him.
Gangster's Paradise?
Yes.
Been spending most of life. Yeah, okay. Number two, I got married twice to the same woman. All right. Number three, I make one amazing meatloaf.
I'm going to go with the Coolio.
As what?
As the lie.
Okay. Wrong, sir. Coolio did challenge me to a fight one night in an LA nightclub when I was working the door, and I couldn't let him in because he had a posse with him that was just too big. And I said, we can't do this. And this dude straight up said, I'm going to get you in the street when you come out of here. And he started to confront me and said, I'm going to take you out. It got heated, and I did go out the back door. I didn't go out the front door that night. But yeah, I did get challenged to a fight by Mr. Coolio.
But you say challenged to a fight. What was there a fight?
Oh, no. Yeah, I'm not going to.
Because that would have been written in the press. And
yeah, that would have been
stupid. That we all could have Googled.
It would have been stupid. All right. Enough of this business. So before we get into the real hot topics here, Rabbi, can you tell us, did you or did you not follow up on the 90210 challenge?
Yeah, I did.
Yes.
I did. So just to give a little background, last week, as we said 2 weeks ago, where I had mentioned there was no way I was able to give or put in that 90210 reference, but I certainly would do it the week after. So last week, as part of our Shabbat evening services, linking it to the Torah portion, which would be last week, looking at Abraham's call by God to go forth from the land of his birth, the land of his comforts, to the land that which God will show him. And the reference I used was one coming from Brandon Walsh, for those that remember.
Walsh.
And if we remember with Brandon Walsh, he had a very tenuous relationship with Kelly. And the quote that I used was when Brandon proposed to Kelly, he said, "It's no trip around the world, but I think we could take quite a journey together." And kind of linking the Torah portion with 90210 of that notion of journeys as Abraham went forth, to always remember those very sage words from Brandon, which is, we will make this journey together. That togetherness that God reveals to us as we go forth from one land to another, or from one journey to another.
That's gorgeous. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have not found a house of worship, a spiritual place that you need to go to find your relationship with the divine, to see where God is calling you in this world, 90210 Temple here in Stuart is calling your name to lead you to the promised land.
So you charged me with a very direct challenge.
Uh-huh.
So I think we had discussed last time, you know, a Party of Five reference or a Melrose Place, kind of those that intermediary period between 90210 when it was shot in the early 90s. So, Father Christian, would you be willing to take the challenge?
Yes, sir. Oh, of course, I have to, because you have beautifully done it, actually. I was teasing you just now, but that was pretty well done. I have to think of a show from that time period of what to go with. So, you know, I wasn't a Melrose Place guy. Party Five, I wasn't that. I mean, we can go...
Dawson's Creek?
It wasn't Dawson's Creek.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Just one or two. I mean, we could try to go, like, Charmed, or is that too late?
No, they're remaking it.
They are.
They reboot. Well, they're rebooting it with a whole new cast.
Oh, all right. I mean, because I was an Alyssa Milano fan back in the day. But I don't know. Charmed? No.
No.
21 Jump Street?
No.
So where are we going with this, fellas? I need, what am I going to quote in my sermon? It won't be this Sunday because the bishop is coming in. The Bishop of Madagascar is going to be at our church preaching at all five services. So we'll have to be in two of them. So
I like the Alyssa Milano. Try and throw in a Alyssa Milano quote.
Okay. So maybe somebody from Who's the Boss?
Sure.
Okay. Angela. Yeah. All right.
Or a Valerie Bertinelli. Throw in one of those.
Brilliant. Brilliant. All right. Well, enough of this madness. That's the challenge, an Alyssa Milano reference that can be there, even from Poison Ivy, you know, from any of her canon of work that she's blessed us with. I think now she has a TV show, too, besides showing up at the Kavanaugh hearings. Haha, do I get points for quoting the Kavanaugh hearings on our show? Let's theologically reflect on that. Maybe not. All right. So, last week, we got into this whole idea of anti-religiosity, what are we experiencing here in the States? And of course, at first, we talked about anti-Semitism. You referenced that you hearing comments, you're surprised to hear certain comments, like you're hearing someone say, hey, this, I went to that bakery and I really Jewed that guy down and got it for a cheaper price. And then people even responded on our Facebook post saying, wow, I think I've been around people who said that. I didn't think twice about it, because it's just unfortunately become just comfortable sometimes to use some of these references, whether it's about Judaism, whether it's about any other religion, the jokes about Islam, about ethnicities, right? They just become kind of calm, like kind of comfortable or just acceptable. And where you could be like, you know, when do you say, okay, hold up, what'd you just say? Excuse me, you know? I think this woman on her Facebook page was like, my gosh, thank you for that conversation. So I wanted to follow up on that and this awareness we have sometimes. I think, you know, racism or prejudice sometimes is just, I think it's a disease that's in all of us. I mean, we all got to confront it. It's all in there. We're innately tribalistic people. We find comfort in our tribes, whatever those tribes may be, whether it's the cool kids at school, whether you're with the computer kids, whether you're with the football jocks, whatever. You find these tribes since you're a little kid, and that moves forward in life, where you just keep to them, it gives you comfort, but sometimes it can lead to this exclusivity and this judgment of others. So today I think we wanted to like just talk a little bit more about that, the anti-Semitic vibe that's still there. I mean, we just got to call it what it is. It's there. It's there in America. We see it more prevalently in the last couple of years, and the horrible images, the swastikas. What's that like? And do you think the people of your congregation, has there been talk about that, fear, concern? Do you beef up security? I know I called you one time to say, hey, what's your security policy? Because our church needs one. Have you sensed, when these posts come out and these news lines of anti-Semitic images or banter, do you feel an anxiety that comes from your congregation that you need to address?
I think in today's world, it is, for us as Jews, it is alarming. We are experiencing, whether overtly or inadvertently, blatant anti-Semitism left, right, and center. You know, from a synagogue perspective, we do have hired security that we have on our on Friday nights, on when we have children for our religious school. We do have hired security. And a part of me that says it makes me feel comfortable knowing that we are protected as we engage community together through prayer, through worship, through social opportunities through the temple. The other side says, what type of world are we living in now that we have to have security to protect us? Years ago when I was in Britain, there was a – we had a joint community event with the wider Jewish community to talk about anti-Semitism. And largely out of the guise of they had at that moment a mayor of London who had a not-so-savory comment that he had said about a reporter who had accosted him. And he was asking him questions. And the mayor had said, you are like the Gestapo. Well, the problem with saying something like that, although it is unacceptable and just not fitting for a mayor of such stature to say a comment like that, was he was also a Jewish reporter. So he wrote it in the press. And it spiraled and spiraled and spiraled. So it went to local and then eventually nationally. So that he was asked by the prime minister at the time to retract his statement and to apologize to the Jewish community. And he refused. He said, I'm a politician. I get accosted by people all the time. I will not apologize for my comments or my actions. And it got really, 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 really bad. So we had brought him into the Jewish community and we had talked and said, you know, Mr. Mayor, can you address the issues of anti-Semitism or anti-religious feeling? We noticed at this time that around the mosques around London is flanked by the Metropolitan Police. Can you touch on that subject and express why, as a Jewish community, that we are not being protected by the local police? The mayor's comment was at that time, well, the Islamic communities are at risk and are at threat. We said, do you not feel that the Jewish community is at threat? And he said, well, it may be, but you Jews have more money. So in that regard, you guys just hire your own. Now, the comments was rather shocking. We Jews don't have more money. We privately hire security and the police to protect us. But a lot of synagogues are going bankrupt by having to hire their own security. And at the end, the questions that were reposed back to the mayor were quite derogatory, coming from the mayor's perspective. You Jews have more than enough. Well, that's a judgment call. That is imposing someone else's view upon us. It's not true. And I think whether those comments are overtly with us or against us kind of has that notion that perhaps we may be ill-informed on the history of where we come from. Anti-Semitism's always been around. It's been around since the dawn of time. It has been around and escalated during the Middle Ages, through the dark times of Judaism, throughout all of our history. And I think part of it from our conversation is also to dispel the myth to, you know, the whole purpose and aim of this program is to allow people to see what we do, to experience what we profess, but most importantly, to come and experience community, to dispel those myths of the ancient ritual murder of the blood libel, which never happened.
That doesn't happen?
It does not happen.
Because when I came a couple weeks ago, I was hoping to get insight into that. You guys are not killing
Christian
babies?
So you know, the ancient ritual myth that says that we Jews use the blood of Christian babies and mix it into the dough
right.
to which we make for Passover, for matzah. No, not true. Not true.
Okay.
But that's the problem, is that those myths or those inaccuracies and falsified information sometimes get believed. And the more we believe it and the more we profess it, the more we influence others in those derogatory comments, whether we say or it's not even what we say, but it's what's in our heart. We may feel it. And I think that's, as Jews, that's one of the most damaging things that we can do.
Yeah, well, I think that there has to be this awareness, or I guess a familiarity more with Judaism. It's still, at least here in Martin County, you know, I say I'm doing a radio show with the rabbi. They're like, oh, where's the synagogue, or who's the rabbi? And they're not aware of it. Where if I say St. Mary's Episcopal Church, be like, oh yeah, that's the one across from Martin Memorial. And you know, I've been thinking about this, about there's still, I think, a lack of awareness of really of the Jewish maybe culture, or we get stuck in myths, we get stuck in stereotypes. And I think part of it is because Christianity obviously is in the majority, but also it's really out in the open. Like we've talked about this, like Christianity is based on this mission to go out and proselytize and to evangelize. That's part of my baptism call as an Episcopalian, is to go out and to evangelize and to spread the word of God. So a lot of what we do is to get out there to serve the community, but also to spread the good news of Jesus Christ and to be speaking about Jesus. And we're talking about Jesus in the press. So it's everywhere. So you can see everything about Christianity, whether it's far right, far left, it's there. Judaism, though, since it doesn't, the evangelism is not part of the tradition, and correct me if I'm wrong here, it's more of a, that's the right word I'm looking for, not insulated or insular, but since there's not the evangelistic aspect of it, the information or what happens inside the synagogue is not as well known to the general milieu, right, to the general population. And so that's where I'm wondering where, you know, when I went to your temple and took part in Shabbat and met the people, and then we did the dialogue and I got to hang out with the people afterwards, you learn a lot. You learn the people, and you break down a lot of different stereotypes and barriers that are there. You know, you have a very diverse congregation. You have people from all over the map, socioeconomically, racially, a lot of things that can dispel some of those myths. So that's important. So I'm just wondering how – I think there needs to be more engagement of the community just with Judaism, and to experience it, not say you need to convert, but just to go, because with anything, because we just get stuck in our own little silos and still look at, have this vision of maybe our Jewish neighbors that, we're not sure what happens in that synagogue, but the key is just go, just take a trip.
And I think that's it. Much like your doors are open, our doors are always open as well, right? You know, we do services 7:30 on a Friday night, 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning. You know, we do run programs all throughout the week. It's an open door policy. You know, if you want to see and experience what we Jews partake in, we have church groups that come visit us. We have, IRC students who, as part of their religion program, have to go visit a synagogue or a church to kind of experience what, you know, other religions practice and what they profess and believe. You know, we certainly have that open door policy. Come check us out.
Why don't you guys evangelize?
So, you know, as you mentioned, the evangelizing and certainly the proselytizing, we as Jews certainly do not proselytize, because I think from a Jewish perspective, it is that notion that if one wishes to experience and be more part of Judaism, it is that notion of it's coming from a good place. It's coming from a place of wanting to explore, wanting to go a little bit further in depth. You know, for a lot of our students who undergo conversion, it is one of those notions that we do say, you know, why? Why now? What is it about Judaism? For their families, we certainly also say, or at least I say, you know, in no way is this a negation of what your family gave you. What it is merely saying is, as I study more about Judaism, this seems to fit for me in my understanding and where I'm at currently. You know, from a proselytizing perspective, we're not missionaries. We don't go out there from some semblance, we do spread the word in terms of what we Jews believe. We believe in God. We believe in faith and humanity. We believe in the goodness that God provides for us, but that we ourselves take that sacred responsibility individually. God gave us free will, but we are also created, what we say, B'Tselem Elohim, that we are created in God's image. So in that notion, when we talk from that perspective, we're really saying, at the end of the day, one of the greatest gifts that God gave us was the Torah. And the Torah itself teaches us the values, the ethics, the ways of life to live and to lead a good and deserving life. That's the message that we try and put out. It's not about, you know, being an insular community. It's about embracing all walks of life and being able to come together as a community in prayer, in social opportunity, through social action of providing for ourselves as well as the wider community, to really make a positive and impactful processed root.
So it's funny that the prejudices that come for Judaism are kind of the opposite of the prejudices that come for Christians. Christians will be the opposite, where we are just going to put it in your face. We can't, depending on the denomination, depending on, you know, just your take on evangelism. But people get worried when you say that you're a Christian sometimes now. I mean, it's not as extreme, obviously. I'm not equating it to Judaism, but there is, if you say you're a, if someone comes up to me and says, "Hey man, are you a believer?" I get worried. I'm like, oh gosh, where's this guy going with this?
But is that because based on the language that one uses?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, but the boldness with it, right? There's a boldness with it. It's in your face. I want to tell you about Jesus Christ. I want to convert you. I want to bring you to it. That is my goal. So there's this, on one side you have Christianity, where the one part of Christianity, which can be go door to door, go in the parks, go on the subways, go on the street corners. Anastasia and I were grabbing, we're at Cold Stone the other day, just sitting there. And these two guys walked in, came in, you know, started just talking to us. I'm like, oh, these guys are nice and gregarious, but there were strings attached. Then came the question, do you guys know Jesus Christ? And I said, yeah, we know Jesus Christ. And he's like, okay, cool, man. All right. And then he left. So that's the only reason why he came in to talk to us, right? Was that boldness. And
so let me ask you from a clerical perspective.
Yeah.
Clerical perspective. When somebody says that to you, do you feel that you need to go into depth on what that means for you? Have you found Jesus? Have you found God? Do you feel judged in any way? Do you feel uncomfortable?
No, because if I just tell them that I know Jesus Christ, usually they'll back off. But it's almost like backing off a salesman. And I think this is what gets to the friction, or I don't go as far as a prejudice, but the worry, and people get this issue sometimes with Christians, is because I'm going to push this on you and you need to know this. And I'm creating this status here that I know something and you don't. You know, when I lived in Chicago, the street preachers would come into the subway and they'd be sitting there preaching about, you got to find Jesus, you got to find him in your life. And I want to be like, brother, you don't know if 80% of these people on the subway car already know Jesus. But you're acting like everyone else here is lost. So this, I think the prejudice for Christians, and not the prejudice, but just the negativity that can attach to being a Christian, is obviously the exceptionalism, the judgment, and the righteousness. I have something that you don't, and I don't see you as an equal, because until you accept Jesus Christ and you're living into your life of Jesus Christ, then we're not equal. That's what gets communicated, which is unfortunate, because that's not what I'm reading in the gospel. I mean, I know there is a point where, yes, you're either in and you're out. You know, you accept Jesus Christ, but there's a big part of the gospel where Jesus is meeting people exactly where they're at, inviting them into this kingdom, and doing it with love, nothing but love.
Do you find as a priest that you are constantly still learning more about Jesus?
Absolutely.
How so?
Well, just the gospels to me, and I'm not just trying to say a trite phrase. I mean, they're just this living word. So constantly, and the Hebrew scripture, obviously, because it's talking about the Messiah and revealing more about God the Father, and learning about who Jesus was. Did he get political? I mean, that's always a discussion topic comes up. Was he fighting against the man, against Rome, and standing against what the world stands for? And is there political ramifications? His own social consciousness, his call for us to serve the marginalized, and looking at that, because there's these different theologies. You'd have to respond to people saying, if you are making more money, then maybe you're blessed. Well, is that what the scripture is saying? So learning about who Jesus was as a person, how he related to people, how he related to both genders, to both social status, how he always treasured people who were even outside of the Judaic way. So he pulled and had parables of people who were outside of the tradition. Like, what is that about? What is Jesus saying about that, about the other, about the foreigner, about the alien, about the non-religious, and saying, hey, look at that person. See what they're doing? That's how you need to act. So yeah, absolutely. I find that I'm constantly being challenged and to learn more, and not just analytically, but I think and you can relate to this. It's also then moving from my head to my heart. That's the most challenging part, is to have the living Christ, and to feel and sense and understand and listen to the living Christ inside of my heart. So bringing this back to our topic, this kind of conversation you and I are having right now can happen between someone like you and me. But if I was having this conversation in a Starbucks, I would be conscious, even as a priest, of the level of our voices, because I wouldn't want to freak people out around us. And I don't know if that's just my own stuff, and maybe I'm missing an evangelistic opportunity and so on. But I for my journey so far in Chicago and Los Angeles, a conversation like that, people might get up and walk away. Like, oh,
but
gosh.
do you find that in today's culture and today's understanding that the ability, the need for us to engage in conversations like that, but to be very cautious of the tone and our volume of our voice for who may be listening, what impact that may have on others. You're talking Chicago, certainly Los Angeles, more of an open society, a little bit more of an open society that allows for those type of conversations to happen, as opposed to where we are, which may be a little bit more conservative and a little bit more guarded. Because I know, you know, when we have conversations, you know, I certainly am aware of my tone. I'm also keenly aware that I have a super loud voice.
We've been out to lunch sometimes. I'm like, dude. And you're like, we as Jews believe. And I'm like, oh my gosh, dude. Osceola Cafe. Mm-hmm. I'm like, man, you do evangelize. See, you do evangelize. You know you do.
I say the volume of my voice is based on the passion that I exhibit. You know, as we talked before, it's also about being proud. You know, I am a very proud Jew, as I'm sure you are a very, very proud Christian. And I think it's, you know, to recognize that and to be able to, you know, express that in certain ways, that, you know, not to bring others in through those type of conversations, but for others to see that passion. It's a living religion.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. To not apologize for it. Be bold, be courageous about it, and not be so worried about the response. So, all right, we're going to go to break. And as we come back, talk a little bit about why are we in, or talk just a little bit about why are we in this post-religious era right now in America? What is going on with the state of religion? Whether it's Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Mormonism. Well, you know, they defeat all the numbers. They're always like doing okay. But what's happening here in America, and how can the Church of the Synagogue approach modern society today? Are we not listening well enough, or what's going on? So we'll get into that on the break, and give us a call here at the radio station, 772-220-9788. All right. Welcome back to A Priest and a Rabbi Walk Into a Radio Station. This is Father Christian. Right next to me is the handsome Rabbi Matthew Durbin, not Dick Durbin, former political representative from the state of Illinois, but Rabbi Matthew Durbin. No relationship between you two?
No relationship.
Never met, went together, never no. Had coffee with you and Kelsey Grammer?
No.
Okay.
Not with Kelsey.
Okay, not with Kelsey. So, wow, you met Kelsey Grammer in a restroom.
Yeah.
Share words, talk?
I probably at that moment in my life probably should have thought about my words before I said them. Because I think as we were literally stall to stall and I had said, you know...
That's tough.
I really like your show, Cheers.
That's tough.
I can't stand your show, Frasier. But, you know,
at least
in
one
year
and all separation for that to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And then as he finished his business and gave me this queried kind of antagonistic kind of death stare and walked away, I thought to myself, I probably should have just remained silent.
Yeah. that's tough, man. You want to say something. You're at the urinal. There's nothing you can do, but you feel like you need to take your moment.
It's Kelsey Grammer.
Yeah.
How could you not?
It was your 8 mile moment. You had to get up on and just get on the mic.
Yes.
Unfortunately, it was in a public restroom in an airport.
Yes.
So, all right. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Thank you so much for being here for the show. A priest and a rabbi, a place where, you know, we just want to talk about matters of faith and pop culture and see them through a theological lens. And also just show what kind of goofballs that the rabbi and the rabbu and myself are. So if you haven't caught up on that one yet, he's now officially the rabbu for the rest of the show, not the rabbi, because he's your boo. He's your boo, girl. All right. So, Rabbi, why? I mean, we've seen the numbers. I think our respective denominations and national networks put out these numbers. The Barna Group is a big religious study group that puts out numbers. St. Lucie County and Martin County rank both in the top 15 for the most unchurched areas in the country. As surprising as that might feel, I think they're one of them's in the top five, one's in the top 10. So I think it's even beyond the top 15. So, and there's other parts of the country where it's, where you can see this, where bishops and leaders are dealing with, do we close a church? Do we bring two together? And you have other churches that are obviously thriving. And we have it right here in town, thriving. And fortunately, we come from congregations right now that are doing okay, that are healthy. But why do you think there's so many, there's this struggle that, as the numbers show, that folks, what we have now, okay, is that we have the first generations of kids who just never gone to church. Like, they just, and I don't know if it's the same thing with,
but I think the question too is, are we seeing a decline in religious observance or affiliation, or for those who want to be or lack thereof, of what it means to be part of a social community? You know, I think in some semblance, there is a tremendous amount of competition. We are in competition with a lot of our kids, with sporting activities, with extracurricular activities, with family, with all these things that say, have we in our society now made religion less of a priority in our lives and overemphasized our own children or our own need for something else? You know, in a Jewish context, why be part of a synagogue? At the end of the day, I could join the Jewish Community Center. They have swimming pools. They have access to worship. They have all these social programs. I can go join a basketball league from a Jewish perspective. I can align myself with others of my own faith that I don't need to actually be part of a synagogue. And I think that that is one of the biggest challenges that we face today, because I think in our context, yeah, it is important. It's important to support a community. As we know, we are, besides Chabad in Palm City and St. Lucie County, we are the only, from a reform perspective, or even a progressive perspective, we're the only game in town. And not to, and again, I'm not trying to evangelize here and to, you know,
you're
to
a pocket evangelizer,
to have, all of our listeners join the temple. But I think that there's something there of, what does it mean to be part of a community? It means to support the community, whether it be financially or through action and word and deed. I think it's about coming together with shared belief, shared ideas, and wanting to express that and challenge it in certain ways that feel comfortable, or that feels like I'm really being part of something that is larger than myself. It's about access. I think one of the challenges that Judaism faces today is through accessibility and through relevance. How relevant is this for me? And I think that there's a lot that we do that is relevant, but it is about making those meaningful moments that people can attach themselves to and say, I have a spiritual connection. I have a ability to be part of my community, to which I am proud of. And I think that there's a lot of competition.
Right. But I think all that competition will win out every time, because we, you know, our church, we don't have the basketball courts. We don't have a gymnastics thing. We don't have, a cheerleading thing. That's always going to be, we'll lose every time to that. But the one thing that we can promise from a Christian perspective is a relationship, a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, that we're going to say is going to transform your life. That's going to bring you a peace beyond all understanding. It's going to give you a understanding and a development of who you are, and bring you closer to the divine. And that peace that's beyond all understanding, that relationship with Jesus, we think it's a transformative power that changes your life. If the church, and I think the church, the reason we're going to say this, if we try to sell ourselves as another congregational gathering, another community to be a part of, another great coffee hour, some good music. We're going to lose out every time. There's even as social services, that we're a place that just does great in the community. There are atheists that do that 10 times better than we do.
But I think the challenge that both you and I, and certainly religion, can understand today is that we are trying as best we can to bring in some of those layers in a way that is expressive, a way that is engaging. You know, we as a congregation, I do once a month, I do a Tuesdays at 2J's. It's a lunch and learn series. First Tuesday of every month, we meet at 2J's. We engage in matters of Judaism, looking at it from a global perspective and really asking some hard questions and having a lunch and learn series.
You guys get a good turnout?
We do. We do. You are more than welcome to join us.
Do you get people from outside the temple?
Every now and then we might get one or two.
See, that's evangelism, brother. You're in a public space talking about Judaism. See, you evangelize more than you know. And I think we got an evangelizer here on the phone here. Can we throw, we got Miss Francis calling in. Welcome to the, or Mr. Francis, Mr. and Mrs. Mr. Francis, welcome to the show. This is Father Christian and Rabbi Durbin.
Yeah, this is Francis. I think both of you know me. I am not religious, but I'm spiritual, and I'm not my body. I am a spiritual expression of God's love, and I love both of you with the love of God. And I'm a failed Roman Catholic because I was born and brought up there, but I couldn't be a good Catholic because of the crazy things that some of the Catholic beliefs that I just really could not believe in and accept. I graduated from a Dominican college, Providence College, and I've also, the best part of my life was when I was an oblivious agnostic and God kept loving me and blessing me. And I had no clue of what was going on, but I was just living my life and God blessed me.
Francis, thank you so much for calling in. Let me ask you a question. Have you been over to the temple to go hang out with Rabbi Durbin before and worship with them?
I haven't worshiped with them, but I went to an interdenominational thing one Sunday. And there was also my friend from the Methodist Church was there. And I spent a couple of hours and I gave Rabbi Durbin my manifesto.
Yes, and I've read that manifesto before. It's wonderful. And let me ask you a question, Francis. Do you prefer to find your relationship with God in a community and a committed community and one a community that you nurture with and you go to and you're there consistently? Or do you prefer to find your relationship with the divine by yourself and on your own and on your own walk?
Yes, I find it personally most satisfying on my own. And if I had to identify myself, I would probably say that I'm a Hindu bhakti.
Okay.
That being someone who is surrendered and totally devoted to God. And God lives in my heart. I don't have to go to a building where there are other people who are struggling and are there to sing or just to go to church on Sunday or on Friday night. I am in church constantly. As both of you know, anytime I speak with you or meet you, I'm just loving you and appreciate you.
Yes, Francis, and I can't thank you enough for calling in. You, Francis, you get the award for the very first caller to a priest and a rabbi. Mm-hmm.
And I love your show. I really have it. God blessed me to find it 50 minutes ago, and I was absolutely glued to it. And I thought I would call and tell you what a wonderful job you're doing for God, and she is so proud of you.
Well, thank you. Thank you, brother. Thank you so much, man. I appreciate for you calling in and being a part of this. And God bless you, and have an awesome day, my brother.
Amen.
And I'm sure we'll see you soon.
Bless us all, and bless the Muslims, and bless the world.
Amen.
God, not just God bless America, God bless everything.
Oh, yeah, we're with you, brother.
All right. Love you.
Love you, too, man.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, Francis has got a great manifesto. But, you know, that it brings up an interesting that point, though, too, is I think I think yoga and the 12-step program do a better job of selling transformation than the church does at times. That yoga is, when you go to yoga, you know you're going and you're tight, you're tense, you're anxious, whatever, and you commit to weekly, daily, that there's going to be change that happens in your life, right? You go to 12-step, you hit rock bottom, you're looking for a change in your life. And the church, and I don't know if you feel this way about the temple, but the temple, I mean, the church believes the exact same thing. That's what a relationship with Jesus Christ is all about. It's about a changed heart. It's about being forgiven. It's about being redeemed. It's about being into a new life of joy, of peace, of vision, of comfort, of being comforted, of healing. And a lot of times what we do is that we sell our social events and we sell the community and we sell the classes and all that stuff, which is all good. It's all being part of a community, but the cornerstone of it for us is a transformed relationship with Jesus Christ. And maybe we get too scared.
It's an interesting notion. Much like Francis had mentioned, you know, I find God in myself. So why of the community? And I think that there's strength in community. I think that, sure, we can pray and access God in a variety of different ways on a personal level, but I think that there's also strength in being together to access the same opportunity. You know, we have in our prayers, in our liturgy, the notion of healing. We have a prayer for healing. And in some semblance, it's, you know, appealing to God to heal my family, my relative, my neighbor, my member of my community, to which, well, what if God doesn't heal? And is God a miracle worker? Or are we just the conduit to express our attachment to one who is ill? You know, we could say the names of our members to whom we are connected with. We could say it silently. But I think that there's strength in community coming together to say, I am praying on your loved one's behalf. God may heal. God may give us comfort. God may give us support. But at the end of the day, the greatest support that we have are those among us who are saying to you, you are not alone. You have a community who cares for you.
Sure.
Who is thinking about your loved one.
Right. But can people get that same kind of care and comfort from their Parcheesi group they get together? Because they might be there with them. I mean, I'll answer my question. No, because they're not going to pray for you. But I'm still getting back at this question. Why are some people preferring to go to other communities and be a part of other communities as opposed to, I mean, once upon a time, even when I was a kid, we couldn't do travel soccer on Sundays. There would never be games scheduled on a Sunday because that was Sunday. It was church day. And so maybe that was just a Chicago thing, but I think that's probably still at the same time a nationwide thing. You didn't schedule games on a Sunday. Then, like,
no,
five,
we schedule games for Saturday. we schedule them for Shabbat.
Yes, right. Living in a Christian country. Exactly.
You know, we have programs throughout the country for school-wide programs that happen to be on a Friday night. Why on a Friday night? Can't you do it on a Saturday night? Do it on a Sunday night? Why the Friday night? Now, I get it from a non-religious perspective, but if we are inclusive and we are sensitive to others around the world and to other faiths, then it's as Jews, we celebrate Shabbat on a Friday evening. That precludes a lot of us from going to certain programs that we would like to go to where we don't have that opportunity.
So again, it's affirming that we have moved into a post-religious society where the schedule that we as a civilization, or at least as Americans, is moving things around where now it is just, it's part, as you said, it's part of the offering. So let's get John from Stewart is calling in, and he'll be our helping us close up the show. So John, welcome to A Priest and a Rabbi. It's great to have you on here.
I got a question for you. I'm an agnostic, and I was raised Catholic, and I turned against the Pope because he was going around the country talking to these ignorant third world women, telling them, "Thou shall not take the pill," and they're knocking out all these kids, and they're, you know, they can't afford the kids, et cetera, et cetera. But I got a question for you, the Christian. Why do you so many Christians look up to Trump?
Here's a quick response. More than any other president, Donald Trump has opened his doors to Christian leaders more than Bush, more than Obama, more than Clinton. And even though that maybe his actions sometimes don't represent and reflect a Christian demeanor, that his he's given this open door access, which has allowed a lot of Christian leaders to be like, well, what do we do here? We're getting access to the White House that we've never had before. But we got this guy who's doing things that a lot of times are not reflecting Christian values. And it's just been this very strange relationship that even, you know, I'm perplexed by it too at times. But it's a lot of it, for my limited understanding, is really just access to a president where before even Carter, anyone else who was very firm in their faith as well, didn't have that same kind of access. So it's been like, well, the door is open. Let's see where we can go with this and see how we can affect policy that would reflect Christian values.
So Hillary's not a good Christian?
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying just from a political access standpoint of being able to go to the White House and be able to talk with the president, but no other time has a president allowed the doors to be open so much. So I can't comment on anyone's like Christian values, you know, but I just knew from a political standpoint, there's an access there from what I understand that's been unrivaled. But John, we're about to close up the show. I thank you for calling in, my brother, and sorry it was so short. And God bless you, my friend. And we will be back next week. And is it true we are going to have the rabbi's wife?
Yes.
We're going to have the rabbi's wife on here, and we will be talking about, let's talk about sex, baby. So let's go for it. Religion a lot of times doesn't like to talk about it, but let's go for it. So she is great at this. She works at the Hillel Foundation at FIU.
FAU.
FAU.
She is the campus rabbi at FAU.
All right.
I think as we close the show this morning, just we wanted to leave with a thought of the day. And I think that thought of the day is that as we come together, that we can bring our love, our devotion, and be very cautious of the words that we say, and most importantly, how we say it, to bring a little bit more semblance of peace and harmony throughout our world.
Peace.